Monday night, I got a phone call. Somebody said, I'm in a gymnasium working out in Marion, Illinois, and there's some guy down here and he's talking about four blood moons. Do you know anything about it? Yeah, buddy! So I stood there and talked to him about it, I sat there and I told him all about it, you know, just ran off a whole bunch of stuff. And they said, really? Really? I never heard all this stuff he's talking about, but he doesn't know what he's talking about. Finally, they said, well, I've got to hang up. And I said, why? And he said, well, I've got to go straighten him out before he leaves. So they headed out over there. Now, what we're going to read is the Genesis chapter 1, and we're going to start with 1 through 19. And when I... How about 10? How about 9? We'll start chapter 1, verse 9 through 19. And I'm New American Standard. Then God said, let the waters below the heavens be gathered into one place, and let the dry earth appear. And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and gathering of the waters he called sea. And God said that it was good. Then God said, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit after their kind, with seed in them on earth. And it was so. And the earth brought forth vegetation. Let's drop on down. I should have started at verse 14. Then God said, let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from night, and let it be for signs and for seasons and for days and years, and let them be for lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth. And it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day, the lesser light to govern the night. And he made the stars also. And God placed them in the expanse of the heavens to give light to the earth and to govern the day and night and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good, and there was evening and there was morning, a fourth day. So that whole idea was God gave the moon and the sun, but we're focusing on the moon, the moons and all that, gave the moon as a ruler of night, which, you know, we can see up by the night. We can see that and understand. But he also gave it for signs and for seasons, for days and years. Now, we're going to talk about some of this. The Jewish calendar is based on the new moon. Because of that, their calendar slides back and forth. And sometimes they have 12 months in their year, and sometimes they have 13 months in the year to keep it all separated the way it's supposed to get. It's real complicated for us because we don't mess with it that way. But they have people who are paid to figure this stuff out and set the dates. Now, the interesting thing about a new moon, this is how a new moon's determined. You know, you go through the phases of the moon, and then there's that time when you can see no moon. And technically, astrologically speaking, that's called the dark of the moon. So the dark of the moon. Now, the new moon is the very first sliver of light that you can see as it's coming out of that dark phase. So the new moon is the very first sliver of light, no matter how small it is. And they went to great expense, or they went to great lengths to determine when this new moon was going to happen. You had to have people in Jerusalem, because there's lights and, you know, bonfires, and it's called light pollution, actually, today. We've got it at Noble. If you want to see stars, go out on a clear night and go to the Winoose Bottoms where there's no lights around. You'll see a lot more stars than you will at your own house or at Noble, because there's so much light. You know, you can see, looks like... Remember when Noble had all those flares and it always looked kind of orange over the top of it? Well, that's that light pollution. So they would actually have light pollution in Jerusalem, and they will send people out into the countryside, and those people would sit there and watch for the first sliver of this moon. That was their job. And when they saw it, they would run and tell the Pharisees, and the Pharisees would declare, this is the first day of a new calendar. Now, in the Exodus, when God's talking to Moses, he says to the Jewish people that that sliver of the new moon is called a new moon feast, a new moon holiday. And so they not only had every seventh day off when this new moon, that first very, didn't matter how small the sliver was, when they first saw that first glimmer of light on that moon, it was another day of rest, and they didn't work from sundown till sundown the next day. And all that time was given off for the people to enjoy themselves and to rest. But notice it's to enjoy themselves. Now I want to read to you just a little bit of a story here in Exodus chapter 35, verse 22. Just this one verse. What happened? Moses has come down off the mountain, already done the golden calf thing. Now Moses is getting ready to build the tabernacle. He's called for the people to make a donation. Verse 22, it says, "Then all whose hearts were moved, both men and women, came and brought brooches and earrings and signet rings and bracelets, all articles of gold. So did every man who presented an offering of gold to the Lord." So he presented this, they presented. Notice it points out it's the men and the women, all of them brought gold to help build this tabernacle. Now, what we don't really realize is how important it is that the women brought the gold also. In cultures of that time, the women, if you read this and you think women are treated bad in the Old Testament, they are treated and still are treated a whole lot worse in regions where there is no Judaism or no Christianity. They value their donkeys and their oxes more valuable than they do their women. And every place where Judeo-Christianity comes into the forefront, it improves that society in all sorts of ways because they're enlightened, they have the Spirit of God, they get the spirit of creativity, they start living their life according to the way the Lord leads them, and the position of women start raising up higher and higher, and they're no longer downtrodden like they are. So it is really important that Christianity does spread. If not, if you want to liberate women in a society, put evangelical Christianity in there, because God Himself values ladies. Jesus Christ Himself spoke to ladies, which was unheard of, even with the Jewish people. Remember, He went to the woman at the well, and they was like, "Gee, why are you talking to this woman for? And of all things, a Gentile woman." God, or Jesus, always treated the ladies very, very well. And He valued the ladies very, very much. And so does St. Paul in his writings. So Christianity has a great cultural building influence on the world. And we are its best hope. And yet they hate us so much. Did you know that Christianity today is the largest monotheistic religion in the world? And it is the now most persecuted religion in all the world. All the world. More of us are getting killed and persecuted and our stuff is stolen and all this than any other religion on the face of the earth. Amazing. And what does our scriptures teach? Love one another. Be good to your enemies. You know, pray for those people who despitefully use you, and yet they want to trample us underground and overthrow us because they think we're evil. But that all aside, yes, I can talk all night. Now, that all aside, the whole thing, though, what is in that Exodus chapter 35, verse 22, it doesn't come through in our English translations, and I just found this out. But in the Hebrew, in the original Hebrew, when you go through, the way it really reads, now, you got men translating it, so, but the way it really reads is, according to the people I was reading, it says that the women were the first ones up to bat, donating the gold to the tabernacle, and the men followed on their heels. So it was the women who was the first ones out the gate donating to the work of the Lord, and the men was the ones following up behind. I hate to say this, guys, I'm proud of this church because there's so many men here. Most churches you go to, it's usually one or two guys, and then the rest, everybody else is women. No problem with the women, it's just the men need to step up and realize how important it is. I think part of the reason is Christianity is based on faith, and most guys, including myself, we want to see things, we want to solve problems. You want us to build a church, we'll go there and we'll build the church. But then after that, and it starts getting into that spiritual stuff where they can't see the results, it starts bothering them. But anyway, that aside too, the whole point is that the women were the first ones out the gate. And now, according to rabbinical teachings, according to the Jewish sages, what they said is, because of that, because the women were the first one out the gate, God gave the new moon feast days or the new moon celebration day was to be in honor of the women, to give them another day off because they were the first ones at the tabernacle or at Moses' tent handing out their gold to benefit the worship of the Lord. So he gave them an extra day off a month, which we all get to participate in. So this day is given. It's not quite like the, you know, every 7 days you were supposed to take off. And so every 7 days they took off and then they, you know, dedicated it to the Lord, which is great and all that. But this particular day is a day when you're supposed to rest and enjoy the rest before the Lord. This is an extra day given for the enjoyment of the people, for the people to enjoy the presence of the Lord. Now, this is all going someplace. If you jump over real quick to Mark chapter 2, verse 27 and 28, but see the Sabbath rest and this new moon rest, they link them together because they're both days of rest that they are supposed to take off. And here's this extra day out of the month that they get to take off, and they're to enjoy their family. Of course, they're to enjoy the presence of God. One guy says it's defined now, what is love? And he asks the question, what is love? And he says, this is what the New Testament says. This is love, not that we love God, but that He first loved us. That is what love is. That definition, this is what love is that He first loved us. That's because it's so easy for us to love Him, or it should be easy for us to love Him, because He's great, He's wonderful, He's kind. Whatever He does perfectly. Whatever He does, it's always good and it's lovely. It's a joy to behold and a joy to be around. And based on that alone, we should be happy and enjoying and loving Him for that. But He had to make it a commandment in the Old Testament saying, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, all your body, all your soul, blah, blah, blah. Commanding us because we're not perfect. So he says the true definition of love is that with all of our imperfection, God the Father is up there loving us. That's what love is when you can love somebody who's imperfect, somebody who is not following the way you think should be done, and yet you care for them so much that you're willing to sacrifice to help them out, to benefit them. He says, now that is the definition of love, when you're willing to help people out who are even scorning you. That's brought up because this Mark passage here, the Pharisees or the Sadducees, these groups of people, Pharisees here, are jumping on Jesus because of His disciples and they're not observing the Sabbath. And Jesus says, verse 27, and He was saying to them, the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. Consequently, the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. The whole idea, again, is that God loves us. God is always looking out to benefit us. Even in the new moon situation, that when they saw that first sliver of moon, they were to take another day off. Here, you got 1 in 7. When you see that first sliver, take another day off. Prop your feet up. Don't work. Enjoy the family, enjoy your life, enjoy your wife, enjoy your kids. Sit down and spend time with your family and your neighbors and your friends. And God, Jesus Himself says, that's the idea really that's behind the whole Sabbath thing. It's not to be a drudge. It wasn't made, you know, created so that man would be serving it. The purpose of the Sabbath was to be beneficial to the man. Be beneficial to mankind. The purpose of the new moon and the sign and the season is it's supposed to be a benefit to us, giving us another day of rest, another day of enjoyment. The Jewish religion has different denominations just like we've got. And one of theirs is called Lubavitchers. If I was going to have to be Jewish, I would be Lubavitcher. I mean, they look a little strange to us. They have some really strict rules. But when it comes to Friday night, on that Sabbath, when that sun sets down, they believe that if you do not take the time on the Sabbath to enjoy life, that you're dishonoring God. God made that day for us to enjoy our life that He gave to us, and they are to do everything they can to bring pleasure and joy into their life, into the life of their friends, their neighbor, and their synagogues. And on Friday night when that sun sets, they're all together, they're singing, they're dancing. When they dance, it's the guys dance over here and the girls dance over there, okay? But they're doing the ya-da-da-da, and they're trying to do everything they can, because they say that if you're not enjoying the life that God gives you, you are insulting God and His graciousness to us, because He gave us this one day every week that we're supposed to be enjoying. And so to enjoy the Sabbath with these feast days and this almost party atmosphere that happens every time they get together on that day is to honor God. They really go out of their way to honor God. And sometimes I think they get a little bit tipsy when they're doing it, but their idea. Now, this is all going someplace. The moon, these things that are given, is to be given as a sign to mankind about God and that He cares for us, and we are to enjoy our life in Him. We are to take what He gives us and honestly make the most out of it. And, you know, it's like squeezing the juice out of an orange. Squeeze all of the joy and happiness out of life that you can, because God created it for us to enjoy. So that's something I don't think we as Christians, especially we as fundamentalists, I'm not saying we need to get together and have a big boozy party, but I don't think we really understand that it's almost a commandment from God for us to enjoy the life that He gave us as much as we possibly can. Look for ways to enjoy it. Just sit down and take the time, or get up, walk in it, whatever, to enjoy it. The Jewish people teach that the moon is a symbol of faith in their religion, and as we see that moon, we're to reflect on it. It's to be a sign to us that just like the moon, sometimes it's full and it's bright, and at other times it's waning, and then sometimes you can't hardly see it at all, or you might not be able to see it at all, and it's just like there's no moon. And they said this moon is to be a sign to us of this is what faith is like. Just like the moon, even when it comes period of darkness, and then you see that little sliver of light. Faith is just like that. Sometimes it's just bright and full, and you say, yes! And like Marianne said, she could see by the full light of the moon the other night. She didn't need to turn on lights because there was a full moon out, and we've all seen it that way. And I've had times in my life where my faith is just like, yeah, buddy, this is the way it's going to be. And then time goes on, you cycle through, and then other times it's like, oh my gosh, I'm never going to make it, this is terrible. I'm never going to come out of this, and then my faith just gets real small and wanes, and it's almost like I lost it. And I've been through that not too long ago. Might as well be honest about it. I was there the other day, a few weeks ago. It's just like, I might as well just quit because I'm just not accomplishing this. I'm not grasping it, and I don't want to go out to Glenwood and lie to these people. But just like the moon, there's that little glimmer of light starts coming back, and they're saying faith is like the moon that's cycling through, and it's going to come back around and it's going to become full and bright again. So I guess what I'm saying is we are out of touch with God and His rhythm and His nature and His signs and the way that He wants us to think. We should be like the Jewish people of old. They would step out and they would see the moon and they would say, there's the ruler of the night that God appointed, and my faith is like that. Sometimes it's great and bright, sometimes it's small, but it will brighten back up again. God is there and He's teaching me through the moon how my faith is going to be. It's there for a sign. Jesus is the Son of God and He's always radiating bright, but our faith grows and reflects Him, and sometimes it's not so bright because we're not in the right position, but we'll come back around again and things will be great. We are to enjoy the nature that God created, and part of our problem is the nature is the civilization in which we live. We are becoming a people who are out of touch with this reality that we actually live in. We live in a false reality. We turn on lights so we have daylight anytime we want it. We You know, we don't have to worry about the seasons because we can go to grocery stores and pick up any kind of food we want, or go to a freezer and have strawberries, or even go to the produce section and pull out fresh strawberries off there. Got to be willing to pay the price, but we can get the strawberries, the blackberries, anything we want, and it's all out of season, so we're out of touch with the rhythm of God, trusting in Him and seeing Him fill up our pantries and our storehouses, and trusting Him to get us through, and then replenishing all this stuff. I'm not complaining. I like blackberries this time of the year, and I like strawberries this time of the year. But because of this artificial situation we live in, we're actually losing touch with the God who made it all possible for us to live in this way. And we need to start making our lives simpler and getting back to reflecting on the things that He tells us to. Like this, when we go out, and we've been doing this the last few times we've been here at church of a night, walk out and you look at the moon and say, oh, look at that. Or, have you ever seen that ring around the moon before? And we should start thinking about these things and reflecting upon nature and everything the way God has intended us to live our life, very close to Him. And all the stuff that's out there is His teaching us. And one of the things that He wants to teach us is our faith may grow, may shine, it may dim, but if once we're Christians, it's always there. The moon is there, whether we see it or not, but it's always there, growing and shining. And in this way, we are also to say, our life was given to us for pleasure, for enjoyment, to make the most out of it. And if we don't make the most out of our life, gaining what pleasure we can along the way. And I'm not talking about drinking and drugs. I'm talking about family and friends and getting together and visiting and talking and watching the sunsets and getting away from the artificial lights and the artificial televisions and having them dictate to us what our life is actually supposed to be like, and start taking it back to, if we have to say it, a more simpler way of looking at things if it puts us in contact with God. I was listening to a comedian, and I wouldn't recommend listening to him. He's foul-mouthed and everything else. But I was going through, and he's talking, and I found out later he was foul-mouthed. But he said, folks, think about it. Why do you think they call it television programming? He said, they're telling you right there, television programming. He says, okay, you people, pay attention. They're telling you the vision they want you to have while they're programming you to think the way they want you to think. And I went, that's clever. They're telling you the vision and programming you to think the way they want you to think. And then he goes on to use some words. And he says, just because something is on CNN, NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox News, do not believe that they're there for your benefit. Ask the question, what are they trying to program you for? Think about what they are programming you for. And this is a comedian, and I'm like, and a foul-mouthed comedian. I'm like, whoa, guy, you've got some really deep thought here. He's saying to his people, he's a black guy, he's saying, don't let... And he honestly said, I don't care what nationality or ethnicity group you belong to. Pay attention to what they're telling you. They're not there for your benefit. They're there for their benefit. Now, if you'll let me wander a little bit farther on this road, you see, we have the Tower of Babel. This stuff is all through the Scripture. Do you know what really honked God off about the Tower of Babel? Oh, it was the building of the tower. That's not what it was. The reason they were building the tower was to spy Him. He said to Noah and his kids, go forth, replenish the earth, spread out, cover the earth. And they said, oh yeah, we're all going to stay together in a big clump in a city, and we're going to build this big tower as a way of keeping people all drawn together. And so it was actually a spite thing. God wanted the people to be spread out over the face of the earth, and man is always trying to clump together into groups. And it is better when we spread out. I like living in the city, but it's better for us if we live in the country. 5% of America lives in the country. 50% of all ministers come out of the country. Why is that? Because we have darkness. We have the moon to look at. We have family to talk to. It's not continually daylight. You know, the sun, the town is always lit up. It's not that way. We have actually time to sit and think. And it was better when we were kids, because I remember going out and sitting on porches and talking to Molly Van. She taught me all sorts of stuff when I was a little kid. She explained to me where redbirds went and where robins went and stuff like that. When I was a little bitty kid, I'd go down there and sit. She'd feed me sugar cookies and tell me all sorts of stuff. And because of that interaction, that more relaxed atmosphere, kids and adults have more time to reflect on the things that's going on and being aware. And all this television programming is to keep us so busy that we don't have a time to sit down and think of what's actually going on. I was just reading this. C.S. Lewis brings this question up. Christianity says that the most important thing in the world is the individual person. If man is going to live throughout eternity, then it's important how that man functions right now. Because if he's only going to live 70 years and say they're Christianity's wrong and people are only going to live 70 to 80 years and then they're going to die. He said, you know, you start off, you can be pretty bad and you can keep getting worse all the time. Well, by the time you get to 80, most people can't be that bad and they're going to die anyway. So then you got new crops coming along. And he said, but if Christianity is telling the truth that all people are going to live forever, even evil fallen people are going to live forever, he says, what if an evil person didn't pass away at 70 or 80, but goes on to live for millions of years? He said, think of the increase. If they were bad and they were a terror at 2 and they were a rebellious teenager and they were worthless at 50 and they just kept getting more and more cantankerous and more evil being brought forth. He goes, if what Christianity says is true, that evil is going to keep increasing for a million years. Think what those people will be like a million years from now. And he says, it will be hell to live with those people. And he says, and I mean that because that's the way Christianity views people who are fallen. They're going to continue being away from God and they're going to continue to get worse and worse. Where a Christian repents of their sin, and we are to be growing in the grace and knowledge, and we should be getting better and better. So when we live a million years and we're increasing in the presence of God and our lives are changing for the better, it's going to be heaven to be around the Christians. And it's going to be really bad to be around evil people who have never repented and never changed their way. And he says, what's the most important? If what Christianity says, then it's the individual person. If it's what the secular world teaches us, remember me talking about out of that Reader's Digest about the secular world took over public education away from the churches for their own secular purposes. Then he says, if the secular world's right, then the government's the most important thing. And the people are less important because you should establish a rule and then keep that government functioning as long as possible. Where if Christianity's right, the people, the individual, is the most important thing because it's going to go on for eternity, where a government will only go on for, say, 1,000 years or 2,000 years. We see this contrasted in Hitler. He was trying to create that Reich that was going to reign for 1,000 years, and he valued his government more than he valued the individual, and he killed millions of people in order to establish the government. What's that guy, Stalin? He valued the Soviet Union more. He valued that government more than he valued his own people. He went on to kill 32 million of his own people in order to establish his government. Christians, on the other hand, says that the point of the government is to benefit the individual, and the government should be there to help the individual to get right with God, so that the individual will repent of their sins. And they're going to go on for millions of years. So the important thing is the government should be there to benefit us, causing us to come toward God. And that's where the United States was established, was by Christian democracy, the idea that there is a God, and the point of the government was to serve the people, and through that to bring them to the understanding of Jesus Christ as their personal Savior, whichever denomination that you want to work through as a Christian. That was their idea when they started this country. And it's been very beneficial. Look at where we're at. And now that people are turning their back on God, they're saying that the most important thing is the government. And they are starting to run over the rights of the people in order to establish their rule, instead of what Christians are saying, the government there is to benefit the individual so that the individual will become a better person. That's what Paul teaches in the book of Romans. So I'm talking all this kind of stuff because the whole, gotta make sure, the whole teaching from God, from the new moons in the Testament, is His creation was there to benefit mankind, to cause man to have time to take off work every single week, take a day off, and then take another 12 extra days off throughout the year just to rest and enjoy your family, and enjoy God, and enjoy the nature, and enjoy bounty that's around you, to have pleasure and joy in life. And God created it that way. And Jesus, whenever the Jews got off balance, He came along and said, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Man isn't serving that day. That day is there to benefit that man. And so we can pull from this. Christianity is there for our benefit. Christ died for our benefit. God is there because He loved the world. He gave His only begotten Son for our benefit. And we are to be improving our life. And we need to take time for our family, for God, for Christ, for church, for worship, but for enjoyment, for pleasure, and take some joy in this life as we go through it, realizing that that joy is based on the fact that God's giving it to us, and He expects us to take the life we've got and enjoy it. And Jesus said, I came that they might have life, and they might have it more abundantly. So even He comes right out and says, the whole point that I came is so that you can have a better life. That is what the church should be teaching, and we should be almost be like Lubavitchers. We should be getting together and not just running in and doing our thing or even having our meals, but we should be doing the things that bring joy, so we can say we are a joyful group and we like our God, we like our people, we like what's going on around us. I like my life. You know what I mean? You guys got it? So man is primary. Everything else is secondary. It was all created to serve us. And now every time we step outside and we see the moon, we should be thinking, that is there as a sign for us. And I'm like that moon. Sometimes I'm full, sometimes I'm not so full. But I'm always there, and God's always there for me. And when that first sliver comes there, He wants me to remember I am to enjoy His presence for an entire day. He just said, take the day off when you see it. And there's times I think we should just kick back and say, I'm taking the day off just to enjoy the presence of God and the life that He has given me.